Welcome to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan, and that voice is one of my favorites of all time. It is the voice, many of you know this, because when I posted that Jamie O'Reilly was going to be on the show, people were like, oh my God, what a perfect show, what a great show, where has she been, where have you been, Jamie O'Reilly, and it's so nice to see you.
I've been in Chicago.
Well, of course, you would never leave Chicago.
You know, I've been busy, but I've been choosing to not make huge public displays of it, and I've been doing these studies with my salons, which I started, and you were one of the participants in the
salons. Talk about the salons, because you have another one coming up on this coming Friday at Wishbone North. It's kind of a love sweet song, a Valentine's salon. What you started doing that, just and it was wonderful. I mean, I remember having an incredible experience. And what did I do? I don't sing. I don't dance.
You sang and danced. You just forgot because I gave you some whiskey that night. No.
It was a debut of Rick Hogan.
That was a tabletop display.
Male crooner.
You told some pretty poignant stories about Nelson Algren, about Christmas and Christmas trees. Well, the salons.
The tortured half-Irish Hogan family
and, you know,
story.
And you had the ladies, you know.
Crying.
Well, the salons, the O'Reillys came to Chicago in around the time of the Columbian Exposition, actually. Yeah. And my great aunt Nell was one of the first students at the School of the Art Institute. Mm. So way back in 1990, when I was asked by the Chicago History Museum to put together something for the Columbian Exposition, we found and looked through their archives, which were in places like the Newbery.
Sure.
And, you know, because that's
Museum,
Friar Tuck, Irwin St. John Tucker, who was a dear friend of Studs Terkel. And I learned about these salons that they did at the turn of the last century. And so I was pretty frustrated with Chicago that they weren't offering more for really gifted artists to just do their thing. This was before Facebook.
Yeah.
So I started literally opening my home.
I know.
And then people paid, you know, dropped something in the bucket, and so the artists were paid, and then it was set up so
when you made, I do remember having drinks, there's no question about it, but you also had cookies or something.
And
it was, the atmosphere of it was so beyond intimate, I thought.
They were right in our face. No. Yeah, the idea was that it was artists with artists, so or folks that didn't want to bother to go downtown and park, but they wanted high-quality stuff.
Yeah.
And so then I became a French word that I have trouble pronouncing.
What is
Solenare.
It?
I do the Italian. But I became like the hostess. And when
How often were you doing them?
Well, you know, near the end, I was probably doing them 6 or 7 times a year.
Wow. And this started about 7 years, roughly seven.
I started it in 1993.
Oh my God!
In another place.
Okay. So I was one of the later edition.
Well, we were working up to you. We had to earn our stripes, and I think we did.
Oh yeah, yeah. People like Michael Smith, and
Stuart Rosenberg did a wonderful presentation on Yiddish music, and you know, and that guy, he's got such a great history as well. And going back to Chicago history, that was one of my first big forays into the music scene, was we would do these live concerts at Navy Pier.
One of the things about you, Jamie, you just were talking about your family coming to this area, 130, 40 years ago. You are so grounded here genetically in the arts and culture community. Talk a little bit more about that. I know you're a suburban child, and I've never held that against you.
Well, but, you know, back in
but
the,
it was your family was as art centric, I think, as any family
right.
I know.
And art centric and eccentric both together.
Sure.
Well,
back
in the 50s with the GI Bill, they were offering housing inexpensively to growing families, and so our family went out to Crystal Lake,
mm-hmm.
and then my mother, who remained there until, you know, the mid-80s, directed a fair amount of theater. She'd been an opera singer before she had her 14 children, and I'm number 9, so, and she's still with us at 94. So we did art there, and then, you know, my dad did the University of Chicago, the Court Theater, Body Politic, you know, all those places, and was known for his Shakespearean. And then Cecily, my eldest sister, is a retired professor from Columbia College, and she's an expert in speech. And my brother Bo runs the Rhino Arts Festival. And then this next generation also is pretty gifted.
What, do you think there is, Jamie, do you think there is some kind of artistic gene that families can? I'm really serious. Is there something, or is it the kind of environment when you would tell me, and please tell me again, stories about what it was like when you were young at your, you know, family gatherings yeah. were filled with, you know, with song and art and music.
Well, I think, oftentimes I think of that wonderful film Quiz Show.
Sure.
The Van Doren family, and how there was this repartee in the family, and there's competition level about being brilliant, and about knowing information, and they were on with each other all the time. And so in our case, it was that we were born into the idea that you read, you take care of your books, you sing, and you make your art. And so we had that permission. And then the piece that I chose to add when I got involved with working with Columbia College and the Cultural Center was how to do it in a practical way, how to learn to charge for what you do, how to monetize what you do
sure.
without and maintain a level of
artistic integrity.
Thank you. That's the phrase I couldn't
artistic
think of.
Artistic integrity. That's one of the things. I mean, your dad, who is one of the great noted actors of his era and of his time here, I am assuming one of the reasons he never, if he did, never sort of took off for New York as he might have, is because of family responsibilities. And one of the things that the older I get, perhaps, and I don't consider myself an artist, but I see a lot of people who remain committed to this place because of certain familial responsibilities. Am I making too much of this? Or?
Well, I think his family was broader than us, to be kind.
Yeah.
But I will say that, you know, there was definitely a sense of place and of making, you know, making a space for art and work. And I would say that what I chose to do when we last were together was to reach out to women of a certain age, a phrase that I hate, who had made a life and now were in kind of a second life.
Sure.
And so my last big project was on end of life and hospice, and I did a series for an Episcopal church on the north side where we did an art show and we did original writing and we did a great show that I called Epitaphs and Apparitions, and it was about ghosts and literature and such. And so, interestingly, 2 years later, I was a grandmother, so I did this chapter about end of life, and then I started
then
now
this
with
new
this new life.
Life. Wow.
And so I'm putting that in perspective, too.
Jamie O'Reilly, thank God, is going to be here all the way until 9 o'clock. God knows where we will go in our conversation. Part of it will be promoting this show she has Friday at Wishbone North. We'll tell you about Wishbone North. We'll tell you a little about Anne Hills, who is one of the great singers in the history of this place, and John Erickson, who plays the piano. Jamie will tell us more about that. Stay tuned. We got to get a commercial or two in. We're talking music, art, life with Jamie O'Reilly. Get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Rahman, Bob Garten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV morning news team. From the ungodly hours of 4 in the morning, when Brett, the engineer, will be going to sleep, and 10 in the morning, when I will long be at work. We'll be right back. That is the voice of my guest, Jamie O'Reilly, who is also telling me that that is, and I would have missed it, a Sophie Tucker song. Sophie Tucker is going to be among the composers, singers you'll be featuring in Love, Sweet Song at Valentine's Salon this coming Friday.
It is.
You and Anne Hills, who's a tremendous performer. I don't know when she's going to be, or if she already has. John Devins, our great mutual friend, has started this kind of concert series in Beverly on 103rd Street at the Simmerling Gallery, Heritage Gallery, and at the Givens Castle. John used to have a place down there. Then he had a club where you may have been the first performer. It was called The Venue in the South Loop.
But I loved performing at his club in Beverly, and we did our...
Oh, the World
Folk. We did
Folk,
the Gift of the Magi there.
Yeah, the World Folk Music Company.
Wonderful.
I've done the Gift of the Magi at the previously mentioned Mr. Rosenberg's Space in Evanston, too, with Jamie. That is, you going to do that again, Jamie? That's really a great show.
You know, we haven't done it for a bit.
Yeah.
But...
because I haven't gotten a call. I'd be horribly upset to see it without me.
I aged out of the ingenue role. But Friday, you know, I'm trying to change that. I have a new look, so you'll have to come and see me.
All you need to do, ladies and gentlemen, is go to Jamie O'Reilly with no apostrophe .com, and you'll get all sorts of information about that. You can buy tickets probably that way, too.
Yeah,
right?
I sell the tickets for this gig. Typically, they don't do that, but we do this. It's my ex-brother-in-law, of course. Mickey Greenberg, the wonderful Mickey, who has saved Lincoln Avenue, I'm sure you've been told this, by providing nothing, you know, no money to him, to provide a space for singer-songwriters primarily to do music there Thursdays through Sunday nights. And what I do is I do kind of a dinner theater ticket. And so my folks from the salon and others from the public come out to these concerts that I produce.
Now, how many of these have you done at Wishbone North?
Well, I've done them three times a year for 3 years, I think.
Really?
Yeah, St. Paddy's Day with Michael Smith and May Day with Anne, and then I do a fall. I always do a fall
program. You must have a sort of solid group of audience members who would not miss anything Jamie O'Reilly
does. And they can be single women who don't have to worry about having a date. That's
right.
Why I chose the 15th. Of February, the 14th.
What a good idea. Well, because I've often believed that all that Valentine's Day, hey, let's go out stuff is a bunch of junk, and you pay, you know.
Of course you do.
I don't pay $20 for a glass of champagne, for Christ's sake, and a lousy meal.
Right.
Yeah, it's all hype and protest. So this one that is, and we'll promote it later in the show, too, because you're going to be here for an entire hour.
Dear God.
What do you mean, dear God? Who's John Erickson?
John Erickson is
a pianist.
He's an outstanding jazz pianist who also teaches at the Old Town School and gigs around town with his trio.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing at Le Piano in Rogers Park on Thursday nights. And he accompanies Sons of the Never Wrong, one of our favorite ensembles.
Yeah.
And I had heard about his skill, and I went to see him and asked him if he would play these songs with me. So I'm going to be accompanied by piano this time, which I've done a fair amount in my day, especially, you know. But in this case, it's a really nice, you know, synchronicity that we have.
In addition to Sophie Tucker, what other performers will you be featuring or highlighting the work of?
Well, I'm going to cover what I like to call the songbird music, which is that I was influenced a lot by records growing up, and Jeanette McDonald, you know, was my heroine, even though her diction sucked, but nonetheless, her voice was beautiful. And so I'm doing songs from the 30s and the 40s, a couple original tunes, but it's mostly kind of a jazzy, chanteuse-y kind of, but not campy, because I don't do camp.
No,
I do humor, but I don't do camp.
Yes, it's not that sort of slit dress cabaret stuff you're going to see with Jamie Arrow. You might see a slit dress, but
yes,
it's not the kind of the cabaret we've known and come to love.
It's me doing what it is that I do, which I understand goes right to the people's hearts. And if I don't make you cry, then I'm not doing my job.
And Hills can make you cry, too.
Absolutely.
The Wishbone North is at 3300 North Lincoln, just north of Belmont. And the other great thing, it's $20. I mean, you've always sort of underpriced yourself, as far as I'm concerned. I'm no businessman. I don't think I've ever charged anybody.
Well, you know, if it's this open, I can comp you if you need it. No one ever asks.
Really?
Not you, Rick, but a person.
Oh.
You know? It's very nice. Just we have a lot of support.
Go to jamieoreilly.com. Had you done a Valentine's before?
Mm-hmm.
When?
Well,
every year?
Not every year, but I've done a fair amount of them. And I, you know, love is the focus. And it was interesting as I was prepping in my head for coming and saying, you know, you don't really have anything to push or sell to Rick. You know, you can just be what is you are. And I thought, well, where are we? And many musicians do not know that As Time Goes By has an opening verse.
Yeah.
And the opening verse kind of refers to the conundrum we're in with all this progress and what still lasts.
What is it?
The world will always welcome love songs. That's what it comes down to, that song. You know, no matter what we have, we have to have a spot for love.
Well, in many ways, this era in our, as the world sometimes seems to be absolutely falling apart, and I'm not just talking about American U.S. politics or local politics. The cover of the front page of the New York Times today is this horrifying story about the floods in Brazil and these mud floods and how they will be happening again and again and again. And it was terribly, terribly depressing to me. It is easy to get, I think, sometimes focused on our own troubles, don't you think? And sometimes just realize, well, we're all in this together. And, you know,
the only thing we're assured of is life, is birth and death.
Yeah. And the only thing we should be assured of is, and if you never have had it and you are still looking for it, love's a pretty good thing to have in life, too.
And love can fuel you for a while,
yeah,
I think.
It can.
If you think back to the Victorian way, you know, a kiss on the cheek lasted a war's worth of anxiety.
So, again, go to JamieOreilly with no apostrophe .com to get tickets for Friday, February 15th at 7 o'clock. What kind of place is this? Because I've never been there.
Oh, Wishbone's what I would call a landmark Chicago family restaurant in Lakeview. It was designed in an era with big rooms and big bulky chairs. And the story behind it is pretty powerful because the family of the Nixon brothers had these just wonderfully brilliant parents. And when the brother decided to, Joel decided to learn to cook, he went, you know, on the Carolina coast and he gathered up these recipes for home cooking. But the paintings, for the most part, that exist in the restaurant are their mother's paintings of chickens in every which way.
It sounds worth it.
Delightful, quirky,
fun. It sounds worth it. Just for that,
in
addition, you get Ann Hill, Jamie O'Reilly, and John Erickson. We got to take a commercial break before we get some news, and that's what we're doing.
There was a child named Bernadette. I heard the story long ago.
That's one of the favorite, and has been for many, many years, songs of Jamie O'Reilly's. Tell me about that song, Jamie O'Reilly, who's sitting here for another 25 minutes.
That's Leonard Cohen's song of Bernadette that was co-written with Jennifer Warnes, who recorded it on a great album called Famous Blue Raincoat. And I learned it and sang it with my sisters for my father's funeral in 1990. And have since sung it in our show, Songs of a Catholic Childhood. But it's one of those amazing songs because it really is about forgiveness and about taking stock and the idea of mercy. And, you know, Leonard Cohen was wonderful and with ideas like that. And
you sang, we did a number of, once again, I know you, those folks listening know that I don't sing, but I remember you saying, was it some event for Studs or 20 events for Studs?
I love that story. And, you know, Mary Schmeek wrote about the story of Studs' 90th when I sang Annie Laurie. A friend came up and handed me this book. She said, you're in this book. And that was pretty cool. Well, Studs was our mutual friend.
Indeed.
And the reason he became my friend is because he would call my phone machine and leave me messages when I would send him notes. And he was just very connected. And when he heard me sing Annie Laurie, he told me, I love to say, "Hi, Jamie, Albert Parsons.
Jamie, you got to sing that."
So then I was asked to do it, and I did it when he passed a couple times.
Where was that? That was at the Cultural Center, right? Upstairs, and
yes.
I think Tim Black talked. And
what a memory you have. That's right.
It's fading fast, believe me, but Tim Black talked, and Haskell Wexler talked.
He did, and Roger was there. It was one of his last.
Right. Well, we've known some great, great, great people. One of the things that always needs reaffirmation is, I think, the number of grand talents and good people in Chicago. It is sometimes very difficult to remember that in the face of the headlines we confront every day and the shenanigans we have to deal with every day. Because many of those people, I mean, you can't take out full-page ads for Love Sweet Song of Valentine's Salon. You can't. You don't have the money.
Well, and it's also Get Real. You know, the truth is, well, there's many things from coaching artists over the years that I've worked on with them. And I would always say that there are three things. I read on the blackboard the three things that are so important for an artist is talent.
That would help.
Tenacity, time, and taste. And taste is subjective. And I think what's important for people is to acknowledge that they're selling something as a product, and not to negate its value, but to recognize what we have an obligation to do is help people see they need it. They need you. Just like in a love affair, we need to show a way to be needed. And I think the challenge we have right now with the way the culture and the world is many artists were infused with this idea of ego, which is to just push yourself out there.
Yeah.
But we're identifying in a different way now because we're really seeing the necessity of a place to go when your heart is aching or when your mind is exploding with all the news, and that remains family, friends, and art.
Well, and also the nature of that sort of human intercourse that can take place in front of live performance.
Yes.
That I think that there is a bond that can be, at best, created in those sometimes, I mean, John Devon's tiny venues on 103rd
right.
Street now in your
and jazzers
salons.
Jazzers have been doing it forever.
Pardon me?
Jazz musicians have been doing it forever. But it's also not fair to yourself to say, it doesn't matter if anybody hears me, it doesn't matter if anybody comes. Because it does matter to you. And
sure it does.
Those
it
of you listening,
to.
Many people just hear me on the radio, you know, or they just, I saw your poster. Oh, okay. Have you ever heard me sing? But nonetheless.
Yes, it wasn't one of those singing posters. What's wrong with you?
It's for me, you know, the painter needs to paint, the writer needs to write. Well, for me, singing, as you know, is something that just comes organically from my spirit. But it's in keeping with the rest of my life, the
sure.
way that I decorate my home, the things that I find myself called to, the
you were
people
talking
I work
about,
with.
You were talking about a recent thing off, you're just talking off air about bringing things into your apartment, these objects and pieces of furniture and photographs and, I don't know, records and
right.
whatever
paintings
else.
And
talk more yeah. about that.
Well, so part of it is having moved from a home.
Right.
And the home I held on to, I really felt my daughters needed it, my family needed a center place, and I really couldn't keep it up anymore. So I needed to move to another level, another place. And I would say that with the found objects, what I was acknowledging first was that the recycle reuse thing was really strong in me, and I thought, I can't, you know, be throwing away paper cups and plastic silver. I want to have people use real glasses and things
yeah,
like that.
Sure.
So it kind of started with that. But then as I would go to these places in the hood, and two really powerful stories stood out. One, you know, was that families would, you know, they would take a home and they would have to dismantle and sell it for their aging parents. And
right.
so I went to one, and it was clearly had been a German couple in the old German neighborhood where I lived. And the records, you know, the LPs, which at that time we didn't know would be listenable because everyone would have turntables, they were German. And you know, the pottery and the glassware and all of that, and having some German history myself, I recognized the value of that. But I also saw that the woman, you know, the daughter who was doing it, who herself was 70 or something,
yeah.
She was struggling with this.
I bet.
So then last summer, similarly, somebody said there's an Assyrian family down the street, and she has her parents' things, and it's really hard for her, and you should go and see what she has. Well, in this case, the mother had collected every tchotchke known to humankind, and it was, you know, a little more Hallmarky, every holiday, little frosted villages. But on this table was this beautiful platter, and it just had a little bit of beautiful trim around it. And I said, well, do you have anything from the home country? Do you have anything from home? And she picked it up, and she said, this was what we ate our rice on.
Oh, wow.
And that I purchased, and I took it home. And it's stories like that for me that, you know, they're not in a garbage dump. So mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Maria Kondo, but... I am trying to breathe new life to these found things and tell the stories mostly of the elderly people who might have lost their memories at the end.
Yeah.
We went into the house of a visual artist, and I collected some of her things, and it was a beautiful story, and looking her up and finding out, and I saved this frame and that I'd found of hers. And my wonderful friend Gabriela Boros, who's a great painter, out of Skokie, she just happened to give me a study from a song I'd done about her of a piece she had drawn before the final. She gave me that, and guess what frame it fit in?
Wow.
So these two are together.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Those kinds of things.
Wow. What are you gonna, well, it's an ongoing thing to figure out what you're going to do with these many. And they're not really lost objects. They're found.
They are found.
Objects.
They'll be passed on. And I am not attached to them the way that I was attached to my piano, for example.
Yeah, and you're not attached to them in the way the people who
correct.
Own them are attached
so
to them.
So I can pass them on in a way that would be more freeing and certainly will be reassuring to my children.
That's fabulous. I can't wait to see your new apartment. That's one
thank you.
Thing. I'm keeping Jamie all the way till 10 o'clock. We got to take a quick little break here.
I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places that this
that's Jamie O'Reilly. She will be here for another 10 minutes. You, I assume, will be here for another hour and 10 minutes as we talk about mobsters. But I will be playing Jamie O'Reilly some more. You can hear more of her. You can also hear Jamie and the great Ann Hills and John Erickson, the pianist, who I don't know. I'm assuming he's also pretty good if Jamie O'Reilly wants to sing with him. They will be Friday at 7 o'clock at Wishbone North, 3300 North Lincoln Avenue, just north of Belmont. For tickets, go to jamieoreilly.com. It could not be easier. You'll find a link there. You'll also find out some other stuff she's doing because she is kind of in her way back. You are filled with ideas. There are a number of things.
Yes.
You know, you were talking just recently about these kind of found, not lost objects, but found objects to which you have the notion of sort of revitalizing them.
Right. Giving the story behind something that was important to a family.
Oh, I think that's
because
a great idea.
I've always had that with the music and the theater.
Yeah.
But it's also, in, especially for women, you know, the collecting some of the things that were from the old sod. And it was also motivated by the fact that I am now a grandmother three times.
Sure.
My grandson Cosmo Angus was born 2 weeks ago.
Cosmo Angus, wow.
Nearly 10 pounds. And he joins Arlo Riley and Olive Beatrix. So I'm pretty happy to have these grandchildren. And I live in this Loyola neighborhood with a throwaway culture. And what
sure.
I mean by that is the students get their stuff from IKEA. Sorry.
Yeah.
But at the beginning of the year, these
sorry,
Crestwood objects that go into the trash at
yeah.
the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about the
And they're not meaningful. They're utilitarian. And
correct.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, because that's where you're starting. You don't want to have something you're going to have to tote around like a china cabinet. But nonetheless, as a grandmother, I was thinking about wood, frankly, and how much is made from real wood now in terms of furniture. And so I also look for pieces of furniture that will then be for them, for the grandchildren.
Well, you're onto something here. What I hope is you're also going to start doing more performing.
Thank you.
I mean, the last couple of years, you've done a couple salons, and I'm hoping that in 2019, because as you said, Jamie, a few minutes ago, that people need that kind of, they may not know they need it, but they do need it.
That I need to allow.
The gathering, yes.
I need to allow for the effort that it takes. That's why having a home at Wishbone is really helpful, because you're not doing the convincing of the venue and trying to sell drinks, although we please do buy drinks, by the way. But nonetheless, you hear what I'm saying. I think that there is a tremendous effort about getting an audience out, and I just am realistic about it, so I prepare like 6 to 8 weeks in advance. And
well, I think that's what our mutual friend John Devins, who was on here not long ago talking about, you know, he tried to make it with the World Folk Music Company, and that's a demanding thing. That's an everyday kind of thing. And so he decided to do this concert series in Beverly, and I think it's working out great.
Right. I think also it's wonderful to have a collaborator, because I remember when we were choosing schools for our children, and people were pressing for homeschooling, and I said, you know, I really don't want to be the expert on my child's education. That's a huge responsibility.
Yeah.
I personally really like various points of view. I like to hear other points of view, and I think that's the case with when you get into a partnership with another person when you're presenting work. So in the case of performing with Anne, Anne's a singer-songwriter. Most of her work is original.
Sure.
She's original. She's outstanding. In fact, on my blog, which is where you can get these tickets, you can read a tribute I wrote to Anne.
Oh,
because
neat.
She's really an exceptional writer and person. And her work is just, you know, full of life and hope and beauty. And I'm tremendously honored to have her with me when we perform.
That's very sweet. I hope you're going to do some more writing, too, because I've always found you to be not just a talented songwriter, but a talented writer of prose, too.
Thank you. I am writing. I just a quick story in terms of the voice. I was given this handle by the great Rebecca Armstrong, who years ago, when I was trying to describe myself in print, which is something I teach others to do. And she said, well, Jamie, you're a voice for the soul of the city.
Huh.
And I used that
That's
for
nice.
A long time.
Yeah.
And I'm bringing that back because I did work a tremendous amount in the cultural arts scene here and volunteered a lot of time. But now it speaks to me as someone who's got a little bit of time behind me, and I have some things to say. So I was invited to perform live for the Midnight Special in their show called Folk Stage at WFMT, and I prepared for it for weeks with my daughters singing Beautiful Harmony last Christmas a year ago. I got laryngitis, and I have, as a trained singer, you can find a way around some types of laryngitis. So the day of the concert, I had my voice back, but those of you that know me know that I can do these high notes and I can just sit there.
Yeah.
But when you have a cough, you don't know what's going to happen. So I did the concert and I was so disappointed in myself, even though I didn't tell them I was sick.
Right.
I just said, you can't do that. You know, my voice teacher used to say, Jamie, there'll be lots of reasons, but there'll be no more excuses. So I didn't excuse myself, but I had to live with myself.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to the recording. And then I went to do a concert with Michael Smith of our Songs of the Catholic Childhood. We chose to do a St. Patrick's Day theme. And that included some old songs, like from the movies, where the songbird style came in. And my voice just, like, came back that night.
Neat.
I mean, the audience was listening, and I was singing, and notes were hitting the back of the room. And so I wrote a blog about it. I wrote the story of my disappointment. It was really the first time I'd admitted publicly, because people listened to that night, and they complimented me. But I knew it wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, I wrote to my dear friend Rich Warren months later, and I apologized. And he said, I don't know what you're apologizing for.
You
were just as good as you always have been. That was a wonderful story.
Well, I want you to do some more writing. I am so glad you are, as they say, back in business, Jamie O'Reilly. I can certainly understand why, after all you were doing, you just needed to take a, you know, what I think you've done is just take a sort of deep artistic breath.
Yeah, I've been paying attention, listening, and making a decision about what it is that I need to say. And listening to what other people have to say. Thanks.
You can listen to Jamie O'Reilly sing Friday night, 7 o'clock, Love's Sweet Song, a Valentine Salon with Ann Hills and pianist John Erickson at Wishbone North. They have food. They have liquor. 3300 North Lincoln Avenue. Tickets are only, for goodness sake, $20. People traveling solo are also invited if you missed out on the grotesque scene that is Valentine's Day in Chicago. And Chicago, rest in shame. It's great to see you. I adore you.
Thank you.